Hi Rainmakers, Davinia here, and if you haven't already seen, my brand new book, Cash's Queen, is out now online and in all good bookstores. Cash's Queen was written exclusively for preteen and teenage girls, with a real emphasis on helping the next generation of young women establish positive money habits and achieve full mastery of their finances at an early age. As a mother of two young daughters, Cash's Queen was a real labour of love, and I hope will have a lasting impact on future generations by helping them tackle some of the financial inequalities that continue to plague us as women. Buy it for your daughters, your nieces, your goddaughters, your friends, and even yourselves. Link to find out more and buy your copy is in the show notes. Enjoy the episode. Hi, and welcome to the Let's Make It Rain podcast. I'm your host, Davinia Tomlinson. This podcast is for the rainmakers, those women who are breaking down walls, building their own empires, defying convention and rejecting stereotypes. Women who are unafraid to have open, honest conversations about money among friends and to share the truths we've been told to keep secret. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and download wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, then please leave us a 5-star review. Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Let's Make It Rain podcast. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by Toby Asare. Toby is Director of Business Development at OMD. She is founder of My Bump Pay and author of The Blend. Toby is also a mom of two. Toby, welcome and thank you so much for being here. Why don't you introduce yourself a bit for the benefit of the listeners and tell us a bit more about your background?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that lovely introduction. So as you rightly said, my name is Toby Asare. I am a mum of two, but I'm also the founder of My Bump Pay, which is a platform that was designed to help women smash the glass ceiling with a baby on the way and beyond. Ultimately helping them to live out their goals that they have in the professional world and also outside of the professional world, because that's really important too. And like you mentioned, I'm really excited that it's very strange to call myself an author, but I have to get used to it. So I have written a book called The Blend, which is all about helping women navigate that working motherhood journey right from the very beginning that they think that they might want a baby all the way through to the beyond and more children and ultimately hopefully finding the success you've always dreamed of in your career. Yeah, so that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, I love that, Toby. And you know what? It feels like, I'm sure every generation has this feeling that when you're trying to navigate and straddle these two seemingly distinct worlds, but which, as you rightly say, you know, we need to find a way to blend as appropriate for us and our personal circumstances between kind of work, home life, motherhood and everything else. So I'm really interested in, you know, the premise for The Blend. So first of all, congratulations, because I know what a massive, a massive feat it is to write a book, not least when you are working, you are mothering, you are a wife, you are doing all of the things and finding time to write a book too. And we'll talk about that process later in the interview. But why is now such an important time for us to have this conversation? I mean, we've seen in recent weeks, and I had this conversation with the last podcast guest, actually, about the spotlight and all of the frenzy surrounding New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern's decision to step down, citing burnout as one of the causes. And so we know that, you know, this is something that really plagues a lot of women. I say plagues, it sounds like a negative thing, but it's certainly something that lots of us are tackling all of the time. You know, how do we try and strike the right blend for us? Why do you think it's so important we're having this conversation right now? What's changed?
I think it's always important. And it's really interesting that you cite the example of Jacinda, who is a renowned, incredible leader that many people can recognize as somebody who has in many ways probably shattered some glass ceilings in her professional and personal life. And therefore for her to come to the realization that, or the point that she needs to take her own career into her own hands and do what is best for her, her family life and her personal life. And that means stepping away from a humongous role for the moment, because I have no doubt she'll be back in some kind of capacity.
Yeah.
I think that just goes to show that nobody is immune from all the different layers of responsibility that women have. But I think if we think deeper as to why it's really important, if I think about the economic situation in the UK at the moment, money talks, right? And we are facing an impending recession. However, research shows that if we close something as simple as the gender pay gap, and I'm not necessarily saying it's as simple as doing that, but if we were to close the gender pay gap, that would contribute an extra £1.5 billion to the economy. And we know that gender pay gap is exacerbated definitely by motherhood as well as other factors, but it's definitely exacerbated by motherhood. So imagine if we could put the right tools in the hands of women to help them to feel more confident about their career and family life choices. And like I say, to be able to blend them effectively without feeling overwhelmingly burnt out or lost or misunderstood in the workplace. Imagine if we could arm women with that confidence and that knowledge and that know-how to do exactly that successfully. Just the impact it would have economically at a time where we desperately need that injection of cash.
Definitely. I mean, of course, you know, my ears prick up when I hear anything around numbers and money, because, you know, that's such a massive contribution. And I think, you know, even when you look more broadly, we saw in the pandemic, that was really when it was brought into sharp focus, not just for women, but for men as well, when they were, you know, forced to recognize the contribution that women's unpaid social care, unpaid domestic work, unpaid labor, just in general, outside of their already hefty workload in lots of respects. And this really isn't an exercise in kind of bashing men or wanting to present them as clueless or, you know, completely oblivious to what's going on. I'm sure that there are lots of us, you know, we live and work among men, many of whom are incredibly supportive of the need for women to have pay parity and to have better conditions and all of those things. But it seems that it's one of those things that continues to elude us, which is this idea that women are better supported when it comes to financial means, when it comes to salary negotiations. And then, you know, the elephant in the room, of course, which is childcare. And we know, again, that there are lots of men that are tearing their hair out alongside us going, you know, why is this so hard? Why are we struggling? Why do we have to make a decision as to which one of us can afford to work, even though, you know, both of us actually, we maybe love our jobs, we love our careers, we've invested in them, but we're having to make very mercenary decisions on the basis of, can we really afford for you to work if it means that we have to put one or two children in childcare, which could potentially cost more than we'll be generating in income. So it really does feel like, you know, I know you say that the gender pay gap is just one of many factors that contribute to this, but certainly it would be a massive step forward in helping us to feel that we can participate more actively from an economic standpoint. And so when we think about, you know, My Bump Pay, which is brilliant, I remember when I first came across it, and I was probably just off the back of having baby number two. And everything that you talk about, everything that you shared really resonated. I mean, I think in particular, you maybe had an index or you had something. I mean, you started My Bump Pay to promote transparency in maternity paying conditions, alongside many other things, different employers for prospective mothers. You know, there are lots of women that feel quite nervous or anxious about even having that conversation, whether they are moms already or whether they are planning to become moms at some point in future. And for lots of us, not all women, of course, but there are lots of women certainly for whom this is really top of their criteria when they're assessing which employer they might choose. And I think for a long time, we felt that this is something that we've had to, you know, it's been shrouded in mystery or secrecy. You never really know what the maternity pay might be until you've already signed on the dotted line. And then you're left having to grapple with, oh, I feel a bit uncomfortable raising this with my line manager. Why do you think we need to have more open conversations about the importance of financial stability for women going on mat leave and for employers to be more receptive to this conversation?
I'm a big believer that if you employ somebody, you should be employing them for the long-term viability and what they can bring and the value that they bring to your business. And we have to accept that life happens, and life is something that happens during one's working career. And life could be anything, right? It could be extending your family. It could be an existential crisis with your family. It could be anything. Like, life literally could be anything. And you can't stop those things from happening while somebody is employed at an organization. And yet, as an employer, you should want to engage with your employees in the best way possible so that there's a really fair and high standard of value exchange, that you are investing in your employees so they give you absolutely the most that they possibly can in exchange for what you are investing into your employees. So that's why I think we have to have these conversations and we can't ignore them. And actually, I think the more transparent you are around how you engage your employees and how you foster employee loyalty and how you foster learning and development with your organization, actually, the more attractive you are going to be as an employer. And obviously, the more attractive you're going to be as an employer, the more competitive you can be in the marketplace. I know in the business that I work in, and the sector that I work in, it's a highly people-driven business. We are in the business of selling media primarily. However, it's the people in those client teams that the clients buy. It's not mm-hmm. just the services and the capabilities that we can offer. So therefore, you want to be able to attract the best talent for employers. That's just the way that I kind of see it. So fundamentally, I think all these conversations we're having about life matters, so be it menopause or be it, you know, having children and extending your family, all of those conversations are really important
mm.
the workplace. So I think it's brilliant that we're seeing lots more employers normalize those conversations. And I think those are the employers that are actually doing a really incredible job at attracting really great, high caliber talent and retaining high caliber talent. We need to talk about retention as well, because the amount that it costs if you've got a high attrition rate in your business is astronomical. Whereas if you can retain the best talent, you'll save money on recruitment, you'll save money on training in the long term. So retention is also vital to a business. And we just can't ignore that people are going to have children. It's yeah. the circle of life, right? It's something that happens. You can't stop it. It's going to happen. So therefore, why not employ the best policies and tactics to enable that to happen, but in a way that empowers individuals, but also empowers organizations to have the best outcome for everybody.
I mean, you make such a compelling case, Toby. I mean, from just listening to you, it'd be impossible for anybody to ignore the benefits, not just for the employee, but also for the employer. And, you know, the thing that stands out for me is what you said about the value exchange, because I think one of the things that I see quite commonly, even within the Rainmaker community, but I'm sure you will see it much more in your community, given your focus, is this idea that value is something that is provided by the employer, and that we should just have an immense amount of gratitude that they should employ us in the first place. They should, you know, we should be thankful that they've employed us despite the fact that we have children. Although I'm sure you have, you know, a number of examples within your professional network, your personal network, of women who return from maternity leave and they are twice as effective, twice as capable, twice as competent, because they are so hungry, not just to prove themselves, but for the opportunity to demonstrate a different aspect to themselves outside of motherhood. So you can, you know, two things can be equal at the same time. You can love being a mother, but you can also love what you're doing in the workplace and what that means for your identity. And I think that that's really important too. But what are some of the concerns that you're hearing from working mothers or even moms that are thinking about returning to work after mat leave? They haven't yet done so yet. What are some of the worries that you're hearing from these women? And what were some of your concerns before you went back? You know, do you have any advice for people that are in terms of how they might overcome these issues?
Absolutely. I think the biggest concern that I hear directly, and also there's sometimes the subtext to what women share and what they're experiencing that I can definitely resonate with on my own kind of career journey, is almost this feeling that you have to start again. You've been on this wonderful track of learning and growing and development in your career, and you feel that potentially you're at a good stage where maybe you've amassed lots of knowledge, you've amassed lots of skills, and you're really having an impact in your sphere or your organization. And then there's this moment where you have to effectively pause or kind of step away from the workplace if you choose to go down the line of having a family. So I think at that moment, there is this tension. I definitely felt this tension between you really want to carry on that path because your ambitions are taking you to a place that you're really excited by, or they're taking you to a place that you have ultimately worked so hard to get to. And then comes this moment where you decide, okay, right, do we have a family now? Or maybe the family thing just kind of falls on your lap and you have to take that pause. So I think a lot of women fear that pause is going to set them back. And that almost through having that pause or that time away, that they have to come back and start all over again to rebuild maybe the success capital that they had, or to rebuild their kudos, or to rebuild their gravitas, or to rebuild their position with either an organization or a wider industry. And yes, whilst it's daunting, I guess what I have learned and what I am still learning on this journey is that that moment of either maternity leave or parental leave is a massive reset opportunity where you can mm-hmm. really step away and take a look at with everything in your career with really fresh eyes and reevaluate what every single thing means to you, what it is that you really definitely want to achieve, what it is that you don't want to achieve, what it is that you'll stand for, what it is that you will now no longer stand for, what are the right boundaries that you need to put in place for you to thrive and for you to succeed. So yes, while it is possibly a pause or a stepping out of your particular industry or your organization, that reset, that ability to have fresh eyes in the way that somebody else maybe doesn't necessarily have fresh eyes, can, if you use it wisely, be your superpower to unlock the next step in your career trajectory, maybe a different step in your career trajectory, maybe the pause that you've actually been craving to actually rediscover what's really important to you. So I always encourage women that taking time out or taking that pause isn't you starting again. If anything, it's just the beginning of a new, really powerful chapter. And you, I think, just, or as women, I think we just have to embrace it, that it can be a very positive thing. I talk about in the book, the maternity mindset. And I think it's a really powerful thing if we allow it to be.
I love the idea of reframing baby brain as maternity mindset as well, because I think sometimes one of the things that I always used to be quite frustrated about is this idea of baby brain is actually, it's just chronic fatigue, isn't it? And I think sometimes, you know, we label ourselves with these things. You know, you might make a mistake, or, you know, I'm naturally a very clumsy person anyway, so some of the things that I was doing them long before having a child anyway, and I'm a chronic daydreamer. So some of the things that I would find myself doing, nothing at all to do with baby brain. I mean, actually, of course, lots of us are hallucinating because we probably had 1 hour sleep that night. But I think, you know, really reframing the way we view ourselves, and exactly as you described, that opportunity to have a reset, it's so rare. I mean, I know that it's becoming much more popular now to think about career sabbaticals, irrespective of whether or not you're a parent or a prospective parent. And I think it's such a powerful thing and one of the best things. In fact, for me, if I had decided that I wanted to give up Raincheck and go back into the corporate world, that would be one of the things that I was looking at. You know, how open is this organization culturally to allowing its staff to explore different pursuits, to take a break and not to have to justify it by all of these different means, but just because, you know, you're taking a break to pursue something else in your life that might stimulate or inspire you and mean that you can come back with, as you say, fresh eyes, a fresh approach. And again, just reflecting on lots of the experiences that people had during lockdown, both men and women. You know, there was lots of evidence that these real alpha men and these city execs who devote everything to work because they see themselves, they see that very much being their role in their families, and then having the opportunity to spend more time at home potentially, or more time with the family. I've seen this anecdotally within my own group of friends, lots of my male friends saying, actually, Dav, for the first time we had the opportunity not just to see what our wives were juggling alongside the workload and childcare and the school pick up and drop off and the after school activities and everything else, but also the opportunity, you know, how enriching it was to be more in the kind of in the nucleus of the family and what that meant for them. The opportunity to, as you say, take a step back to reflect on, do I want this for myself? I'm on this path, but how did I find myself here? Did I just kind of drift into it? Or is this something that I very intentionally wanted to pursue? And so we've seen lots of people thinking about career changes, setting up businesses, taking a completely alternative path. We know that, you know, the uptake of things like shared parental leave in the UK and paternity leave is relatively low. But what I would like to see is that off the back of the pandemic, you know, looking for opportunities to flip it into a positive, that start, you know, we start to see a real shift in terms of more and more men thinking about how they can take that time for themselves, but also take that time to invest more in the early stages of their family's development too. One of the things that I always like to talk about with, you know, women like you, Toby, who are operating at very senior levels within the workplace and doing all of the things too, is, I suppose there's two parts to it. You know, as a married woman, I'm always interested in hearing experiences and examples of what it means to have a supportive partner. And again, you know, we think about Sheryl Sandberg, and she's not the only person that's talked about this. There are many high-flying women that have talked about the importance of having either a super supportive partner or no partner at all if you're a woman trying to climb the career ladder. And so, Toby, in your example, in your case, how would you say that your husband contributes towards your blend?
He's absolutely fundamental to my blend. And I would say, and I would caveat that, obviously, I'm in this position. And I do think that it's your support network, and everyone's support network looks really different. It might be a husband, it might be a grandparent, it might be a friend, it might be a neighbor, it might be paid help. In my case, right now, currently, it's a bit of everything, but my husband is definitely fundamental to my blend. I mean, when I started where I work now, I should have said at the beginning that I also work full time. When I started where I work now, it was a completely new role, new sector to me. So there's many things that I was having to learn on the go. So he stepped in pretty much to do drop-offs and pickups and do whatever else that I needed him to do so that I could lean in and really try and take the reins and make a mark in this new role and learn as much as possible. So that's one tangible way. And soon, pretty much, he's going to do the same again with the impending book launch. You know, he's going to take up probably a larger percentage of the pickups and drop-offs that we pretty much share almost 50-50. But having said that, if he's in a really busy period of his business and growing his business, it's me that picks up the slack. So it is very interchangeable. I think we're both fundamentally incredibly important to each other's blend. We've got individual goals for sure, but the family goal is one that's very clear to us. And therefore we take different roles and we lean in at different moments, depending on what's happening in our irrespective career. So yeah, fundamentally, he's also my biggest fan and my biggest critic in the same sentence. So he'll say, you know, that piece of content is good, but I think you can go deeper. And I'm like, really? Okay, let me go back to the drawing board. So yeah, he's absolutely fundamental in everything, in my career, in everything that we're doing, my bump pay, and obviously in raising our children.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I mean, you know, you rightly outlined that for different people, the village looks different. So, you know, for me, for example, you know, when I think about my village, I'm somebody obviously that has two daughters. They are small. We've relocated from the UK. We've moved to the Caribbean. And so that means that our village looks somewhat different. I'm also a divorcee. So obviously my parenting looks different. We are co-parenting versus having what might be viewed as a more traditional mode of parenting. And so it is important that when people are thinking about what might this village look like for me, what does my blend look like, that we recognize that it, you know, it comes in different forms, but that you can still make it work. So when I think about my blend, it means that I must have a nanny. I must have some, you know, proper childcare support that is not just me that's here. Obviously the girl's dad is there too, but it can't just be me and him. Even if we were living in the same house, it couldn't just be me and him, because it's not enough when you're trying to do so many other things simultaneously. I'm fortunate enough to have really supportive family members. My mom will be with us. She's with us for part of the year, every year, which means that in addition to, you know, paid childcare support, that I also have family support, that the girl, you know, and it means that if the girls are happy and stable, well-nurtured, even in the midst of chaos, then I'm happy and I can happily do what I need to do that fulfills me as well, so that everybody feels that they're getting what they need.
I think you mentioned something that's so important there, and I can't remember the exact words that you used, but you said, I've realized that I need more than that in terms of help for everything that you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that as women, I encourage everyone, if there is more that you're trying to achieve, if you are trying to achieve something that is beyond the average, more is required in terms of resources, more is required in terms of infrastructure. And it is fundamentally absolutely okay for you to therefore create a structure that is more than yourself, because you cannot do it without the help. You know, if you can afford the help, do it. And if you can't afford the help, but yet you're trying to achieve something great, don't be shy to ask for the help from trusted friends or family or wider community, or find means to find and get that help. Don't think that, oh my goodness, I've got this dream or I've got this thing that I'm really trying to achieve and it's so great, but yet I still feel like I've got to do every single thing for my family. You don't. Or there comes a point where you need to, you know, take that point and say, actually, no, I'm going to invest in X, because I know that investing in X, I can do three times over here and be three times more productive, which means at the end of the day, I still will get that time with my children because I've done that thing in half the time. So it's just a different way of looking at it.
But you know, oh my gosh, I could talk to you at length about this topic, because I'm sure it's a trap that all of us fall into, myself included. You know, I'm not holding myself up as a beacon of virtue on this. I mean, even the idea of having paid childcare, I swear to God, like having a person that lives with us, you know, for a long time I resisted. And culturally, that's, you know, in this part of the world, that's a thing that if you are a working mom and you're trying to do all of these different things and you have the means to be able to afford it, then having a live-in nanny or helper is something that is fairly standard. However, for me, coming from London, that was something that you would only do if you were really, you know, in a bulge bracket income. And you have these stereotypes of what it means for people to have live-in childcare support. And so for a long time, even moving out here, I resisted that, even though in London I did have help. But I'd rationalize that in my mind by saying, oh, well, it's just an extension of nursery, or it's just an extension of their after school activities, or, you know, we've got an au pair and she comes, and, you know, on occasion, the au pairs that we would have, they weren't necessarily living with us, so they would leave. So you can rationalize it by saying, oh, but that's different from this. And what we do is to trap ourselves in these conditions, which mean that we're all unhappy because you're trying to do everything yourself. The children aren't getting the best of you. You're not getting the best of yourself. And you're just in a bad mood all of the time and exhausted. So this idea of trying to be superwoman, I think what it does is undermine our ability to remain in our zone of excellence. My zone of excellence isn't spending, I don't know, 5 hours. I can't even think of what it might be. 5 hours ironing. First of all, I don't even iron my own clothes.
It's so. Not mine either.
So I will happily pay a person who says, oh, Dav, I can do that for you. This is what I charge. I can do it in 2 hours and I will deliver them back to you, freshly laundered, ironed, folded, whatever. And I'm like, oh my God, you can do that. Amazing. As soon as I discovered services like that, life changed.
Yeah. Yeah. And you obviously have to be careful where you apply the money. But it's one of the interesting, I think one of the most powerful things I've taken away from writing this book and this process is speaking to women who have done incredible things. I mean, none of them will tell you that they did it by themselves.
No.
They will tell you that they've had to find the right infrastructure to help them to do it. And sometimes, like you say, it is services.
So Toby, just changing tack slightly, changing course. One of the things that I've always admired about you is how stylish you are. I say this sitting, recording this podcast in my joggers and my rain check t-shirt. This is, unless I'm doing a function or having to do a speaking engagement and I'm dressing up. And don't get me wrong, I absolutely love the dressing up and glamming up. I know how it makes me feel. I know how it makes me present myself. I feel that my public speaking is better when I show up, you know, when I properly show up and I put on my heels and I do my makeup and all of that. But day to day, you will find me in joggers. But one of the things that I admire about you is just quite how beautifully groomed you are. And I, of course, I'm not in your house, so I don't see you all the time. But I remember a post that you shared on your Instagram, which I absolutely loved. It was so heartwarming. But you talked about your dad in particular. And I know that you're probably your entire family are super stylish. But you talked about how your dad is a bit of a style icon, which I just loved. And how as a family, grooming was something that was always a real priority, obviously alongside your academic achievements and everything else. That's a given. But how you present yourself was something that was really instilled in you from an early age. First of all, can you share that, you know, a bit more about that upbringing with the listeners? And also, to what extent do you think this can contribute to our self-esteem, particularly as women? But I know that, you know, it applies to men as well. But, you know, even in that example I shared for myself, I know how I feel when I dress up and I put a face on and all of that. So how important do you think it is?
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, my upbringing, and I look back at it very fondly. I think there's one clear example that comes to mind. And my parents own a business and they still have this business. And during the holidays, sometimes we would help out. And I remember one day I turned up in what I thought was the freshest, flyest baby blue Adidas tracksuit to help my dad. And I can't remember exact words he used, but it was something to the effect of absolutely no way. You will go home and you will get changed and you will come back. Dress properly. Like in a nice way.
Yeah.
Because he placed so much emphasis on how you show up and what that means for the task that you're about to do and what that means for your mindset applied to the task that you're about to do. So you show up as you would like to be addressed or as you would like to be considered or as somebody who really means business in this business context, right? So that's always been a powerful reminder. And even things where I remember landing my first job or going to my first interview process. And one of the first questions my dad asked me alongside of, you know, are you prepared to ask all the right questions, et cetera, et cetera. He was like, what are you wearing? Wow. And I was like, I don't know. I'm just going to wear this suit that I've got. He was like, no, because you've already worn that suit in the first round. So let's, like, you know, very generous, go out and make sure that you've got the right thing to wear to your interview process. And I think that has left a lasting impression on me in terms of how I show up as an individual. And that has not changed, even though I've had children. And I think there's been reinforcing messages throughout my career. There's another example where I worked in consulting. And I was relatively junior at the time, so not necessarily always client-facing, but one of the senior partners came to me and said, I know that I can ask you at any minute to come with me to a client meeting because you are always ready. And that has never left me in my career. I always want to be ready. I always want to be the person that
I love it.
I'm either ready in terms of what I need to say, what I need to deliver, but I'm also I'm always ready if we had a random client meeting and then you just have to be ready, right? Yes. I don't know if I'm explaining myself properly.
You are, absolutely.
But then I think when it comes to motherhood and then working motherhood, throughout maternity leave, it is really about bringing life into this world and nurturing life into this world. And it's so easy, as we all know, to forget ourselves in that journey.
Mm.
Yet we go through the most immense life change at that stage. And many of us also physical changes. And so I think what happens, and I know this definitely happened to me, is that you almost kind of get to the point where you're about to return to work and you've actually forgotten all about yourself and how you show up and how you place value on yourself. Mm. And you've got this slight moment of panic. You're like, oh my goodness, I'm going back to work.
Yeah.
What fits me? It's a fundamental and very important question. How do I want to be perceived? I'm not sure if I recognize the woman that I was before I went back. I know I've evolved. I know in some ways there are so many wonderful things about my evolution and my personal evolution. But how do I present that to the external world? Because you've probably been hibernating in your own kind of bubble of maternity leave. And so I think that practice of placing value on yourself, irrespective of your motherhood journey or irrespective of where you are, is so fundamentally important, because I think we're so used to putting ourselves last.
Yes.
So I think even if it's not for other people or for other people to perceive you in a particular way, I think it's so important for how you place value on yourself, and therefore that will impact hopefully how you show up.
Mm. Oh my gosh, I love that. You know, this example that you've given of even at a very junior stage in your career, just always being ready. You know, you see these memes and things on Instagram, or just these, I don't know, catchphrases, these things that take hold, but this idea of stay ready so you don't have to get ready. I love that. You're just always ready. And so it means that you're completely unfazed by whatever might be presented with, but also you can be opportunistic. It means that you can be agile. You can respond really quickly to things. I mean, it's a brilliant lesson for life, isn't it? And it started with your dad. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about all the time is, you know, the impact of our parenting, not just on our relationship with money, but, you know, the course that our life might take, both positively and negatively. And so that's just a brilliant, it's just a beautiful example, and perhaps an unexpected one, because I think it's something that you assume, we naturally associate appearance and concern over appearance with women. And so it's just nice to hear, you know, from your perspective, a completely alternative standpoint here, where actually that was coming from your dad, and what impact that's had on you in terms of your career and your life.
I do think deep down, as I kind of reflect on it as we're talking now, I do think deep down there was probably a part of my father that was probably thinking, this is a Black woman entering the professional world.
Mm.
You can't just turn up anyhow. That's probably also deep down in his psyche that, you know, sadly, we all know sadly what sometimes the chances are sailing through an interview process as maybe, let's say, a Black woman versus a non-Black woman, right? Mm-hmm. And therefore, that old horrible trope that sometimes follows us around, you know, having to work 10 times as hard definitely probably applies to how we show up as well. So probably putting twice the effort to show up and therefore be taken seriously in whichever arena that you step into. It's sad, but I think it's ultimately fundamentally
a reality.
So I think that was probably in the back of his mind too. So that day that I showed up in that fly Adidas tracksuit.
I actually can't imagine you in an Adidas tracksuit, first of all. I mean,
it was baby blue from top to toe. I think I had baby blue trainers, baby blue backpack. I think I'd been to America that summer.
Oh,
and
wow.
That was when, it was, you know, the time. Pound versus the dollar. That was the time of the tracksuit. Yeah.
Oh my God. Brilliant. Yeah, no, I mean, I completely, everything that you say there really resonates, particularly about, you know, this idea of working twice as hard. I think for our generation, you know, in trying to dismantle some of those, they're not necessarily stereotypes. I mean, they're absolutely rooted in truth and necessity for lots of us, and they still are in many respects. But I think for our generation, as we think about how we break some of the old ways of doing things and try to reinvent what it might look like and to turn some of those negatives into positives, I think, you know, you have certainly embodied that, and it just becomes, you know, it's a real joy to watch you on your Instagram feed. There have been so many things that you've worn that I've gone, oh, hang on, Toby's got that. Okay, great, she's tagged it. I'm going to go and get those boots because I like those gold boots, you know? So it's just a really nice way for you to kind of flip that around and say, you know, actually, this is just part of my being now and I love to do this, which is lovely. You can really see the joy in it in you. So when we think about the blend and the process of writing the book, which I'm sure must have been you blending like a beast. And you've shared before how for you it involved writing the book while you, you know, really maximizing your time. So writing the book while you were on the train, while you're in the gym, and just basically maximizing any time that you had to get your thoughts down on paper and really write this book. And in so doing, and this is why this book will be so powerful, in so doing, really kind of live by example in that you are, the messages that you are sharing with women is that this is not about perfection. This is about just getting the job done and giving it everything that you've got. So, you know, as we said at the start, you know, we're recording this podcast in your lunch hour, which is, again, you blending like a beast. But of course, one woman's blend is another woman's overwhelm. So how do you think women can, you know, just like we were talking about with regard to the village, how can women identify what their perfect blend looks like?
I love that. One woman's blend is another woman's overwhelm.
Yeah.
And you're right. And the question you asked me at the beginning of this call is, how are you? And I was like, slightly overwhelmed, I won't lie. Because there is lots of things happening, but in a good way. I look at it as a really positive thing that there's lots of positive opportunities. But I think the question that you ask is so important in terms of how does one woman find their own perfect blend? I think you've got to experiment a little bit. So you have got to, I think I got to the point last year with lots of different experimentations and kind of having written this book of knowing that actually, if I don't work out, let's say, a certain number of times a week, and it doesn't have to be as prescriptive as that, I know I'm going to tip into the realm of the burnout phase, that it's not good for me and my family. And sometimes that workout might just be, so for example, this morning, I knew today was going to be a packed day, but my son said this morning that he wanted to walk to school. I was like, amazing, fantastic. I'm going to walk you to school. And I'm going to run back home. So that for me was just my way of being active today. So I think you've got to be really in tune with yourself. And sometimes if you struggle with that, maybe write it down. Maybe write down the things that you did that day. Maybe it's three or four things that you did that day. Write down how you feel at the end of that day. And you can start to notice a pattern that actually you doing those things four times consecutively has made you feel really burnt down, overwhelmed, feeling like you've got nothing left to give. And I think being really honest with yourself and being honest with your partner, your friends and your support network and getting them to keep you accountable to how you're feeling and what you're taking on is really powerful, because I think women are, we are at the helm of so much, either in our professional lives and our home lives. And so therefore we can't afford to be depleted because we've then got nothing left to give.
That's so, so true. I mean, what you say about having your support network hold you accountable. I mean, that's really interesting, because I think one of the things that, because I, everything that you say really resonates. And I know if I'm not, if I don't do some form of movement every day, I mean, I would probably say 5 days a week, I have to do some kind of movement, whether it be just a, if I've done a 10 minute yoga stretch, then I'll feel okay. I like to go and do like a proper workout with weights and everything else, but sometimes that's not possible. And so I'll say, it's okay, Dav, just roll out your mat and do 10 minutes. And I will feel really good for the day, because if I don't do that, exactly as you describe, I feel popped down, I'm grumpy, everything's just like, you know, all the wheels start to fall off and I just feel a mess. But having people in your support network that you can trust and who know you well enough, because I'm somebody that always prides myself on not necessarily being 10 steps ahead, because it's 10 steps ahead of whom, right? You know, you can't be 10 steps ahead of someone you're not competing with. But I always pride myself on having everything together and compartmentalizing my life to such a degree, like everything is in its appropriate place. And it doesn't mean that there isn't chaos. There is absolutely chaos here, don't get me wrong. But I mean, feeling like, no, but it's organized chaos, so I know what's happening. But there will always be that one friend who knows me well enough and who will observe me from afar and who might send me a WhatsApp message just saying, Dab, what's your day off this week? And I will know that she has been watching me and she knows how to position it in such a way that I'm not going to be like, well, what's that got to do with you? She will just gently say, I'm just reminding you to do something for yourself this week, to give yourself a morning, give yourself an afternoon where you're not doing work, you've just gone for a walk. you're opening up your mind. You know, one of the reasons that we moved from big city life to island life was because I had started to feel the overwhelm of being in a big city. And so one of the big drivers for me moving to a much smaller island was that, you know, I could go for a walk on the beach. And so she will say to me, have you been for your walk on the beach this week? Because there are so many instances that you can go, weeks can go by, I don't go for my walk on the beach. And then it's like, but Dav, you're just, if you're stuck at home working, you could be doing that in London. So you need that support network who can hold you to account. So that's a brilliant thing that I think we all know, but very, very few of us will actively lean into. So it's a good reminder, I think. So when we're thinking about just working women in general, and you must have seen and heard all of the stereotypes, just like I have. What's the number one stereotype, do you think, that you'd like to see thrown in the bin, completely consigned to history?
I mean, where do we start? Where do we start? I think the stereotype that working women just want to work to a point, go off and have a baby, get paid to have that baby, and then come back and just coast, or maybe not come back. And have, quote unquote, taken all that money. I don't think it's necessarily always the case. It's not necessarily always like that. Mm-hmm. That really frustrates me. You know, I've been in situations where I've interviewed for roles, and it's wrong. People should not do this. But I've been asked, who earns more, you and your husband? Are you planning to have more children? Do you really enjoy working given that you've got children? I mean, bizarre questions that's got nothing to do with my ability to perform in an organization whatsoever. And so sadly, I think there are still some stereotypes out there that women are going to go off and have a baby and therefore no longer contribute or no longer be valuable, I think. Mm. So that is something I'd absolutely like to see absolutely annihilated. Mm-hmm. Because I think the wonderful thing about The Blend, the book, and also the community of My Bump Pay, is that there are so many women out there doing exactly the opposite, you know, having children, raising families, whatever, you know, that family looks like for you, and absolutely killing it, smashing it, running businesses, leading large organizations, changing things in our world that we need to change for the better. And so, yeah, I really like to see those stereotypes absolutely disappear.
Yeah, I mean, that's a brilliant one. You know what? It's a shame that the people listening can't see my face when you were describing those questions, that anybody would think that that's appropriate. But yeah, the idea that women go on mat leave and they're on holiday, or, you know, people might say to them, you know, how are you enjoying your time off? Meanwhile, you're like, I haven't slept in a week, or whatever the case may be. Maybe you have a dream baby and you have slept in a week, but either way, those questions are completely inappropriate. So this idea that, you know, we're just looking to coast when we come back and that's it.
Yeah.
We're completely,
and in the majority of cases, you know, last time I checked, not all the time, but last time I checked, it does sometimes take two people to have a child, right? And we asked all these questions to one person.
Who'd have thought,
which
right?
Boggles my mind.
Yeah, awful. But yeah, brilliant one. That's a brilliant one to throw in the bin. So... just now in this final segment, coming back to the money, because of course this is a podcast about women and money and, you know, its importance in our lives and how it facilitates the extent to which we're able to, you know, live completely unapologetically and, you know, aspire to whatever it is that we want to pursue. But how important is money to you? And would you say that this relationship has evolved over time or matured in any way? How would you describe it?
I think money's always been important. I would like to say that, you know, obviously things like happiness and all those things that money can't buy are incredibly important to me, but I don't think it negates the importance of money. I think as I reflect on it, I've got two small children, they're age 5 and 3, and they're at the beginning of their life. And there are so many incredible things I want for them to experience. Some of those things money can't buy, like love and community, but some of those things money can help open the door too. And so, you know, I desperately want for them the absolutely best that they can possibly get their hands on. And sometimes that, you know, that requires money and means to do those things. So fundamentally, it's still important. And I think it's evolved and probably become a bit more important as I've become a parent. Whereas before it was kind of like to, I guess, fund fun and holidays and all these lovely things. Whereas now I think it's to build a future for, yeah, my beautiful children. So it's very important.
I would echo a lot of what you've said there. And I think it's interesting how, you know, our relationship with money and the importance we place on it, whilst it doesn't necessarily increase or diminish in importance, certainly the focus or the emphasis that we place on it shifts over time, subject to whatever phase of life we're in. So that's really interesting. And then I guess thinking about, you know, some of the financial decisions that you've made, Toby, over the course of your life. And, you know, I share with the Rainmaker community quite candidly some of my money mishaps, because I think it's important, particularly in the work that I do, that nobody views me as sitting in a place of judgment or complete, you know, money perfection or anything like that. But actually recognizing that lots of what I'm able to share and based on my own personal experiences alongside, you know, practical professional knowledge and all of that, but that we all have sometimes some really cringy financial decisions that you look back and go, oh God, like, why did I do that? Even perhaps at the time you're doing it, you're like, this is a terrible decision.
But, yeah.
Okay, so let's start with one of your best financial decisions and one
best
of your worst.
Yes. Oh, goodness me. I'd say my best are probably on two extremes of the spectrum. I'd say one of my best, or our collective best as a couple, as a family, mm-hmm. was probably buying our first property and really stretching. I mean, we were at a point of inflection, like, do we buy a bit further outside of London? Do we buy kind of a bit closer to London? Mm-hmm. At that point for our first property, and we took the massive stretch, absolutely massive stretch, to buy in Zone 3, our first property. We loved living there. We sold that property during lockdown, actually, and that, I guess, the equity value or the equity gain that we had made on that first property allowed us to buy a family home that we absolutely love and has space for, you know, our children to run around in the garden, and it's not too far from my parents. So that's massively paid off for us. And I remember talking to my dad, and my husband and I talking to our dad, and kind of saying, you know, what do we buy in this area or do we buy in that area? And he was like, absolutely no doubt about it, you go for as close to London as you possibly can, because that's where your money is going to grow in terms of your property. So yeah, probably one of the best decisions for us.
Brilliant.
On the flip side, I can think of many bad decisions, and one of those that kind of comes to mind, I can think of one quite recently, actually. But one of those that comes to mind is, I remember thinking, like, you know, I was going to buy a bag. I love bags. So I was going to buy a bag at a particular high-end brand. And I walked into the store on Bond Street and I couldn't decide. So I bought two bags, apparently, as you do. So I was like, I can't quite decide which one I'm going to go. I'm going to go home and, like, test it with my wardrobe. I was so excited. Anyway, decide which one I want to keep and come back to the store and say, right, I want to return this bag because I want to keep the other one. And they were like, no, ma'am, it's no refunds. And the policy's right there on the desk. But obviously in my haste of, like, either my youth or I don't know what it was, I think it was actually on my lunch break. I don't even know what was wrong with me. I didn't realize, or I didn't read the sign that you can't refund this bag. So this expenditure that I definitely did not mean to make twice over, you know, I just basically had a sunk cost. And I think in the end, I sold it to my sister in exchange for her helping me out on something.
Brilliant.
But it just goes to show, and I know lots of people talk about it as a financial principle, like, if you can't afford something twice, don't buy it. So I definitely learned my lesson the hard way. Or recently, another one, very, very recently, is that we thought we could go on a family holiday. And in the end, it turns out that we couldn't go because I had booked a speaking engagement. And it was booked a long time out and I didn't look at the dates. Anyway, we get to maybe like the night before the speaking engagement, and then an alert pops up on my calendar saying, your accommodation in such and such place, we can't wait for you to arrive at your stay. And I was like, oh
God,
my goodness, I haven't cancelled the hotel. And I had to call them up and I had to feign like, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. This is really bad. I shouldn't be saying this. One of my children is terribly sick and we can no longer make it. And begged them, and they were like, oh, mom, that's absolutely fine. We'll cancel it with no charge. I was thinking, oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. We've all been
so
there.
Grateful.
Oh, God.
So Yeah, always read the small print, guys.
Always read the small print. But honestly, I'm so glad it's not just me that does this, because I think our brains are so overloaded with all of the things. Yeah. Because we can seemingly do everything from our phones, and you feel you've covered everything off. Sometimes,
exactly.
But sometimes there's that nagging feeling. You're like, I'm missing something. You go to sleep and you're like, I'm missing something. But you're like, it's a bit like Home Alone, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I'm not going to leave my child. But then you have that feeling there's something's up, and I just can't. I don't know what it is, and it's that. And then you get the alert and you're like, oh, for God. Or the money's just deducted from your account. And you're like, oh, my God, $5,000. What's happened?
Jeez. Yeah, I've been there.
Relatable. Okay, brilliant. Thank you so much. And then my final question before we get onto the quickfire round is, so, of course, we talk all the time about making it rain. You know, from day one of Raincheck, our hashtag has always been, let's make it rain. And, of course, really we're referring to making it rain in our own lives, starting with investing in ourselves. So what would you say has been one of your best investments in yourself, and how has it transformed you?
I'd say two things very quickly. I'd say one is probably books, because they're so affordable, they're so accessible. There is an incredible amount of knowledge out there in terms of where you can, you know, educate yourself or be inspired or learn from other wonderful, incredible people. So I'd say books have definitely been a game changer for me. And then secondly, most recently, I think I kind of alluded to during this conversation that I had changed sectors, I changed industry, I moved into the media sector. And I've written before about actually facing severe bouts of imposter syndrome, which I almost hate that I've faced. I don't like it, but it's been part of my journey, and I'm very honest about my journey. And I remember feeling very low one day about, you know, where do I learn and grow in this industry? And everything feels very confusing. Where do I even start? And literally an email popped up for mentoring sessions where you pay like 100 and something pounds and you get access to 4 hours of 4 different incredible female leaders in this particular world of advertising and media that I work in. Mm. And normally you should really ask if you can expense these things against a learning and development budget. But I was so desperate, but also not wanting to let people know that I was finding things certainly difficult in certain areas. So I just paid for it and I did it. And it was absolutely incredible, difficult in some ways, because it made me face some truths and some things that I was struggling with, but I was really finding difficult to admit. But it actually gave me a lot of confidence that I was on the right track. I just needed probably an external voice that didn't know me and was a bit more objective to say that, no, you are absolutely on the right track, but here are a couple more pointers that you can kind of do along the way to really help you on your journey. And that has been transformative for me, and some of these ladies I've kept in touch with, and they've been so incredible. So that investment of £100, I think, has supercharged my confidence in terms of my decisions that I've made in my career. So I'd say those are two things, investments in myself, that I'm really happy that I've made.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, they're brilliant examples. And actually, I mean, you've articulated really well the power of mentoring, because I think sometimes it's easy to question what value will I get from mentoring? And I suppose, you know, being quite clear on what it is, what's the answer, what's the exam question you're setting for yourself? And you were quite clear on what that was and how those ladies could help you. So that's fantastic. Okay, so Toby, 3 quick fire questions before we wrap up.
Okay.
Very, very quick. Okay. So, as I've said, you know, I love your Instagram feed, particularly the style ones, particularly the style posts. They're my favorites. So who is your favorite source of daily joy on Instagram, would you say?
Ooh, on Instagram, daily joy. There are so many people. My goodness. Since you mentioned style, I have to say this lady, her name is Renee. She lives in the US and her Instagram handle is High Low Lux. Oh, absolutely love her. I've heard of her. Daily joy, daily inspiration from a style perspective. She makes me want to cut my hair really short again. so yeah, I'd say from a style perspective, it's her. And I guess from like a woman in the workplace perspective, there are just so many inspirational people. I think someone like Sharmadine and what she's doing with The Stag is incredibly inspirational. Love her. Yeah, I think she's great.
Fab. Okay, next question. Money is no object. What are you blowing the budget on?
I would love to take all my like loved and most cherished people in my life on holiday. Like that would be incredible. Let's all go to an incredible island and let's just all have a great time together. Life is so short, and I think those memories are what are so valuable. So I'd love to create those memories with all my favorite people in the world, in like the most amazing location in the world where there's no gray skies or rain.
Love that. Sounds dreamy. And my final question, finish this sentence. Anyone that knows me would be surprised that secretly I am what?
My goodness. Secretly I am. It doesn't quite fit into a sentence, but secretly, if I sit down and the TV's not on, I will fall asleep in about 1 minute. That's me. Like, my husband will walk into my room and like my laptop is upside down. And
Oh my God. That's me in the cinema. There's no point taking me to the cinema for a first date or anything. Or that's like, I remember like going on dates when I was a teenager or even in my early 20s. And I'm in my mind, I'd be like, oh God, I know what's about to happen here.
Yeah,
and
I struggle. Why are you taking me to the cinema? It's a dark room.
Don't bring me there.
It's cozy.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'll be asleep in 2 minutes. Oh, that's brilliant.
I'm the same.
Toby, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Where can people find out more about your wonderful book, about the work that you do, and connect with you?
Amazing. So the book is out March 9th, available at any kind of retailer. And yeah, in terms of finding me, I'm at My Bump Pay on Instagram, pretty much is the home where you can find me. So thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day. Hi everyone, Davinia here. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If any of what you heard resonated and you'd like to find out more about how Raincheck is helping women all over the world build sustainable long-term wealth, then visit our website at raincheck.com and join the mailing list for more commentary, tips, and opinion on how you can start taking steps to leveling up your financial well-being today. You can follow us on social media at Raincheck, and don't forget to share, like, rate, review, and subscribe. See you next time.